If you type in the search bar of Google, at what price did Abanindranath Tagore sell his paintings, the first hit will declare that his paintings sold for $500,000. And you will be glad that life is fair, because the famous artist received a sizable commercial return. After all, money gives the final stamp of approval, be it art or literature or a packet of candy. No? Well, not really. In truth, Abanindranath sold hardly few paintings in his lifetime. Almost the entire body of works sat tight in the repository of Rabindra Bharati University for ages after his death. In fact, there are likely to be some of it yet to be brought to public notice. Welcome to my podcast, Art Beyond Canvas. If you like my podcast, please click the bell icon and follow me. I already spoke about the very spirit of Bengal school in my earlier episode. The pioneering artist was, of course, Abanindranath Tagore. But there is a difference between looking back and looking ahead. An event that looks like a random occurrence today will appear perfectly reasonable in terms of cause and effect tomorrow. Everything makes sense in retrospect, because human mind is a magic box that conjures up stories to link absolutely any set of random dots. That is why it seems as if Abanindranath Tagore's coming up with his signature art form was a deliberate act. As if his nationalist spirit, nurtured in the Brahmo household, made him decide to offer the country some kind of style that would defy the convention of the Western academic art. But was it like that? Definitely not. A true artist or poet or author will never begin with analyzing the social situation, then the market, and then the demand-supply situation, and finally take up a project based on various factors like the corporate world does before launching a new product. A truly creative person will follow only her own spirit, not what the market forces or social demand is. It is those handful of masters whose creations coincide with the need of time, become famous and prosperous out of their passion. The rest either disappear without leaving a footstep or emerge from the fog of the past when time comes. Once one of my publishers of early days told me, "Why do you always complete writing a book and then send it to us for evaluation? Just write the synopsis and send. If it fits the demand of the time, we shall take it up. If you write the entire novel first, you already lost a couple of years in writing it, and then we might find it unsuitable for the market." It sounded reasonable, but a sincere and honest author I was, and I am. So I could not act like a corporate strategist for writing my novels. I followed my heart and suffered the brunt of it. It hurt. But there was no other option. To understand the spirit in the family of the Tagore, let me throw some light on the fact that the household was not exactly beyond all contradiction and confusion. In a nutshell, the great-grandfather of Abanindranath Tagore was a leading businessman with interest in trading, banking, mining, as well as indigo farming. He was one of those thriving entrepreneurs, just like the British free merchants spun off from the East India Company. His partner was indeed a British merchant called William Carr. Like most of the wealthy Bengalis of the time, Dwarkanath Tagore too embraced the British culture and lifestyle in totality. He travelled abroad and refused to show remorse for doing so. His ways defied Hindu traditions. In fact, at that time, as explained already, Western paintings captured the fancy of the Indian population. The rich households tried to elevate themselves in status by hanging paintings done in Western academic style on the walls. Dwarkanath built his mansion in the style of British architecture. He got the rooms decorated in Western style. But his affinity towards the West and his defiance of social custom alienated him from his own family. His wife supposedly used to take bath before talking to him if necessary. This conflict of ideals was not an easy one. It ran right through the spine of the large family. And Abanindranath Tagore must not have harbored great respect for the British ways. It is not unusual because the women folks of the family did not approve of the same. Abanindranath, though a lonely child, must have had the influence of the elderly women in the family. Hence, the conflict between the two outlooks ran deep into the family. The artist grew in the thick of it. Such an atmosphere must have compelled the young mind to consider the pros and cons of both worlds. Moreover, there was an artist as well as a leading influential figure during the late 19th century named Shyamacharan Srimani. His book Arjo Jatir Shilpo Chaturi, which meant the con of the Aryan art, left a deep impression in the young Abanindranath. In this book, the author said that a real artist must be concerned about expressing the feeling or spirit instead of duplicating the outward appearance of objects. You see, it was not about patriotism or Indianness, but about the real meaning of art that he wrote about. When Abanindranath was in his early 20s, he began to get lessons from the Italian artist Olinto Ghilardi. That was his introduction to the Western academic style in oil painting. But soon, the young man began to grow tired of painting landscapes in painstaking process. The patient layer-by-layer method of oil painting failed to fancy Abanindranath. He left after 6 months. Then, after some time, he ended up with another European artist, Charles Palmer. This time too, in a while, he was disillusioned with the academic technique of copying human figures and objects following strict method and discipline. Finally, he left this lesson too. It was not the drive to defy the British or his passion for nationalism that made him drop out of the two lessons one after the other. It was his hunt for the right way to rhyme with his spirit that dragged him to Mughal art one fine day. He was quickly drawn to the Mughal miniatures as well as the spiritual classics of India. What emerged from his newfound passion was Krishna Leela, and thus began his journey along the path of his own choice. His hunt for the missing element in Mughal art remained for a longer period. Even if he loved Mughal art and all his life he kept painting in small sheets of paper, yet he saw the void in it too. He felt that expressions were missing in the men and women depicted in Mughal painting. He must add the spirit to the otherwise inanimate characters. But how to do so? As indicated in my earlier episode, Japanese wash technique held the key to this for Abanindranath Tagore. He employed wash to instill the spirit, and such wash turned out to be the hallmark of Bengal school for a very long time. If we look at a few paintings like End of the Journey, we shall see the profound spirit of the image. In this painting, a tired camel slumped on the ground seems to be burdened under the load of its own hunch. Similarly, his masterpiece, The Final Days of Shah Jahan, captures the melancholy and pathos of the old emperor on deathbed with his daughter seated on the ground. Of course, this painting is special for another reason. Despite the fact that the artist dropped all shadows of Western academic style, yet in this image, we can see the depth of space and volume depicted quite in the Western way. This painting is a classic blend of Western, Mughal as well as Japanese wash techniques. The signature element of Abanindranath in this painting is the spirit of sorrow and loss. Of course, his usual style claimed Indianness loud and clear. This is why his painting Bharat Mata won the hearts of the nationalists during the Swadeshi movement that was sparked off as a response to the division of Bengal by the British. This is not the forum to discuss such aspects of history, but I cannot help but mention that such division was the early attempt of the British to divide India along the lines of religions, Hindu and Muslims. Today we may find various other reasons to suit our political agenda, but the split was inspired by the British more than 100 years ago to further their own interests. However, Avanindranath's style eventually got aligned with the nationalist spirit. I would not say that he did deliberately. He simply followed his own passion and nature. His quest was finding originality and imbibing spirit in his art. That's all. This is why he said at a later date that painting a sunset while looking at the setting sun and doing so from the memory of it do not really differ from each other. Both are copy. Neither is original. Neither carry the spirit. One is copy of the scene and the other is copy from the memory. When some feeling or spirit is conveyed through the medium of paint and canvas, it is called art, according to the artist. Hence, express in whichever way you can, it will be art. Does it not rhyme with the modern day outlook of art world? Yes, it does. Everything he painted was natural expression of Avanindranath. If not, he would not have shifted out of painting entirely at a later date and dedicate himself to making small statues made of scrap material. He called them Kutum Katum. Kutum in colloquial Bengali meant relative. Katham in colloquial Bengali meant framework. He said that when he happened to see some dry branch of a tree or some other item of insignificance, he noticed familiar characters in them. And he applied layers of cloth or clay or something else to give them shapes, to bring them closer to what he had seen in them. He called them toys. Rabindranath Tagore called them toys. Most people called them toys. But they were Kutum Katum for him. They were his expression of intimacy and affection as well as love. The man remained engrossed in his world of expression until the end. Once a visitor went looking for the artist and found him searching something in the garden frantically at every nook and corner. After inquiring, the visitor learned that for past 3 days, Avanindranath had driven everyone in the household mad by hunting for a mouse. He was making one of his toys, a toy mouse. But as soon as he had attached the long thin tail, the mouse gained life and slipped out of his hand. He was looking for it because he believed it was hiding somewhere in the garden. When the visitor reported it to the poet Rabindranath Tagore, the poet burst into a booming laughter and said, "Aban has always been crazy." Now imagine, how come someone could stay devoted to art all his life without selling almost any artwork in his lifetime, not be crazy? Indeed, he was crazy and delirious in passion. He was one of those game changers in the history of Indian art. He was the pioneer of Bengal school. And he did not earn loads of money by doing portraits of rich people or printing images of popular gods and goddesses. He did what his spirit prompted him to paint, just like the masters in the Western world. And the commercial world did not respond. I am repeatedly harping on this aspect so that the young artists of today do not lose steam after failing to get commercial return right in the beginning of their journey. Stay tuned for the next episodes to hear about the followers of Bengal School.